This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Patrick Devlin, and joined with me, as always, is the amazing Amy Nelson. Amy, how are you?
I'm doing great this week. I'm very excited to be talking more Discovery. And we have a crazy topic. Not sure quite how I feel about it, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I'm a little intrigued. I've also, you know, I'm coming to you from about a week from Tuesday to have this conversation. So, it's very interesting.
Yes. Okay, good. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, I had to come back for this one because I missed it the first time around.
Oh, yeah. Can I just, time warp past next week? I've got open house, so I get to meet all the lovely parents, and I've got a couple day-long meetings. Let me just jump over that.
That's why I'm back from the week from next Tuesday, because I'm on vacation that week.
Oh, my God. You are always going on vacation there.
I am.
It sort of sounded like me.
I love my... Yeah, but mine aren't all in, like, 3.5 months. I spread them out all across the year.
Well, I am taking you up because I have a lot of trips planned this coming year, so I'm excited.
Awesome. You'll have to jump around so we can record episodes.
Yeah, we will.
But we are not the only people here today, are we?
No, we're not.
There is someone else that has joined us from another time and place. In fact,
literally.
From Sunday. From quite literally Sunday, and we are Saturday, so... Or Amy's Saturday, and I'm a week from next Tuesday, so...
We're all over the place.
And that would be Liam Smart. I could have looked at his name on his screen.
Yes.
Hey, guys. How's it
Liam,
going?
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys?
Yeah, doing good.
Yeah.
This time travel thing makes me a little tired, though.
I don't know. It makes you queasy, hey? Especially coming from the day in the future.
Yeah, that seems rough.
Well, it's pretty early in the morning here. I should still be asleep, but, you know.
That's even worse.
But no, thank you for having me on The Edge. I'm excited to be here talking with you guys. It feels weird being on this side of the conversation, usually listening to you in the car. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Oh, well, we're glad to have you, and we're glad you're on this side of the conversation this time. So, in case the listener hasn't caught on yet, we're going to be talking about time crystals, and that's why we are acting ridiculous. Liam is in Australia, so he actually is a day ahead of us right now. Mm-hmm. I am not a week from next Tuesday, although I want to be. And Amy is here on Saturday as well, 3 hours behind me, which is normal. But Liam, since this is your first time on The Edge, what is your history with Star Trek?
So I guess I probably started watching Star Trek at about the age of 9 or 10. My parents told me that I could watch an episode of what they were watching, which happened to be an episode of Star Trek Voyager, which from memory, the episode was Drive. It might not be, but that's the first one that is stuck in my head. But seeing as I love motor racing, a racing episode in space just seems like the most coolest episode of anything ever. And I was hooked. Watched some of season 7 and some reruns, but it sort of really disappeared when Voyager finished. I didn't really watch Enterprise at the time until 2009 came along with the new movies, and I got right back into it.
See, another person who fits perfectly into my theory that I don't care if longtime Trek fans don't like 2009 or the Kelvinverse, as long as it's bringing in new people to watch, and those people are then going back and watching other Star Trek, it's doing its job.
Yeah, exactly. And whilst at the time I didn't really have too much idea about the full canon and some of the issues that you can probably find with some of the newer movies, to me, they were amazing. And it brought me back to something that I loved as a kid.
It's the only reason why my wife has watched any other Star Trek. So,
I happen to like
some of the things that happen in the new movies, but I'm not a huge fan of the new movies per se. But I'm very happy that he exists because it brought a lot more people to the fandom.
Yeah. And as I say, if I didn't see the movies, if I didn't get back into it, then my partner wouldn't be into Star Trek and some of my other friends wouldn't be into Star Trek. So it brings other people along with it too.
And you wouldn't be here talking to us today.
Exactly.
And by the way, we might not be here talking to us today because Discovery might not exist if those movies hadn't come out and CBS saw a way to monetize Star Trek again. So Amy, you want to give the idea for this episode now?
Oh, me? Well,
yeah. Or Liam, you want to do it?
No. So, I was talking with Liam and, asked him to come on because he's a great contributor on the Babel Conference. I have read his comments so much on postcards and thought, here's a guy who really enjoys Discovery. And with my persuasive powers, got him to agree to come on. I was like, hey, what do you want to talk about? And Liam, you just from the get-go said time crystals. So tell us sort of why time crystals and what is that interesting to you and what are we going to talk about?
So time crystals in Discovery are used obviously as a time to device just to see into Pike's future. And obviously they've done things on with the Red Angel. But I thought when we watched Through the Valley of Shadows, there were a lot of talk about Pike's decision and obviously seeing what happened to him and then linking it up with the menagerie. I thought it would be interesting to take that sort of idea with time crystals, but apply it to scenarios that, say, Kirk, Picard, Janeway, Sisko, and Archer faced, and seeing what they would do with a time crystal and whether they would take it or not.
So I found this very interesting because the first thing that I was thinking of, obviously, with Picard, and I was getting, obviously, Locutus, and we'll go there, but I was like, okay, I obviously came up with an example for Picard, and not knowing too much about the other series, I was like, oh my gosh, we're going to have to talk about all the captains. Thankfully, we've got Pat here that's on Warp 5, so I think Archer will be covered, and then you, Liam, love Janeway. So that was leaving Sisko and Kirk up in the air for anyone to grab. And so I'm interested to see what we come up with. and so, yeah, if you don't mind, let's just start with Picard.
I was going to say, let's start with the one that was obviously going to be our worst and start with Kirk.
Oh, and
but
end with...
You can start with yours because, okay, listeners... Kirk is the weakest of all three of us. We all know every other series better than TOS. So I was kind of thinking, let's get it out of the way and hope whatever listeners we keep through that will stay till the end.
Oh, okay. That is a better idea.
Should we talk about what we thought of time crystals or not really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, if you want to, all right, so Liam, what did you think of the time crystals before we get into the captains?
Originally, I thought the time crystals were a terrible idea just because of the name of them. I really love time episodes, and they're some of my favorite episodes of Star Trek, anything like Year of Hell, especially being my most favorite episode from my most favorite series. They're always the most interesting kind of episode, but I just thought they could have named them something cooler. Obviously, we heard the Klingon name for them, which was, excuse my terrible pronunciation, but Borg-Kut, which is the Klingon name for them. But I thought time crystals, they could have named them something better, temporal whatever. But I kind of was reading up on them, and thanks to Justin Ozer, when we were listening to the live show, he posted in the chat there that time crystals were actually a real thing. And that made me start looking at them, and whilst they're mostly theorized, the idea comes from real science.
Yeah. So I wasn't in that chat, and I didn't see it from Justin. Although I did hear that he had posted that. The problem with that is those time crystals that are real, even though they're theorized, don't do anything that these time crystals do.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
They're not even close.
No, but it's just an idea that a time crystal could exist, and obviously Star Trek extrapolates
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, it's science fiction, right? So need fiction to make that work. Mm. It's not science fact. If it was science fact, it'd be way more boring.
Yes.
And, you know, I always love when people like scream like, but that's not how it really work. Yeah, well, it's fiction, guys. Calm down. Mm. Plus, we're cool with warp drive, but we complain about everything else. It never really bothered me that they use time crystals until I actually found out that there are time crystals that don't work that way. Then it was like, oh, they should have named it something cooler. Before that, I was just like, eh, whatever, name's a name. But all right, I mean, yeah, fine. Take them or leave them. And I feel like their only existence is because they wanted to call back to the menagerie, like you said, and more importantly, they wanted to give us something that was going to break on the Red Angel suit. Just breaking the suit itself was like, well, we can build it again because we've already built a second version of that in this universe. So just breaking the suit wouldn't have fixed the problem. They needed a piece, a part, a thing that would be the catalyst to destroy that now they can't replace.
I mean, I could have taken or leaving the time crystals from the overall storyline. I mean, I just thought it was a wonderful way to bring the menagerie and Pike's future into the series for other people to see, for those who don't want to watch TOS.
Listeners.
And for the listeners out there, we're laughing because pretty much all of us wanted to raise our hand, but Liam actually did.
I don't have a problem with TOS. It's just hard for me to watch because of, I guess, the graphics and the special effects, which I find very difficult and shouldn't be a thing. But it is, because it was...
Well, it's from the 1960s, so...
right with you, Liam, 100%.
I'm actually not. I understand it. I get it. I get a lot of people feel that way about a lot of things. And if it wasn't Star Trek, then most people would agree with you, why watch something from the 60s? I don't dislike TOS, actually. The reason it's my weakest is my wife dislikes TOS. So at night when I lay down to throw on Star Trek, her answer to me basically is anything but the original. You know, so I watch a lot of everything else. I've said it a million times on this podcast. On Warp, my first episode was TOS. My favorite episode of all time will always be that. Let That Be Your Last Battlefield from TOS, simply because of the history of that was the first episode I ever watched with my father, who passed away, and it taught a valuable lesson. It's not even the best episode against racism that Star Trek's ever done, but due to all the outside factors, it'll always be my favorite. My wife has no interest in watching it whatsoever, ever. So it is my weakest, but I get what you guys are saying. It is hard to watch if you're used to watching TV now.
Yeah.
Well, I can't even get my partner to watch TNG. Sorry, Amy.
Oh, we are going to have a talk. Sit down.
I actually am very happy to hear that. I love TNG, but hey.
Hey, so getting back to the time crystals, I see what you're saying of making the connection and finishing Pike's story, and that we, you know, that's definitely something that the time crystals did. But during, while our podcast and while season two was on, it was very interesting because Zach Moore would bring up the point of, you know, destiny versus fate type of idea and how they use the time crystals. And I had an idea and wanted to run it past you. So in the season two, they were talking about the Klingons. Torath, I think is the kid's name, was saying, well, if you touch this time crystal or take it, then your fate is sealed. And Star Trek, I think, has never really had that perspective until now. And I almost am now treating it more along the lines of, like it's a myth, like it's a mythology. Like if you take the time crystals, then this is what is said to happen, but not necessarily be the case. Because
I gave you that answer.
You what?
Yes. When we talked about it during the season, I said, but just because they say that it's the final answer doesn't mean it is the final answer.
Well, but I'm saying that it's just the mythology around the time crystals that,
right?
Yeah. Because
it's not true. It doesn't have to be true just because they believe it.
Yeah, I don't like having the idea that Star Trek is saying, okay, you have seen this, and there is one timeline now that you exist on because you've seen it.
I gave you the answer, so I of course agree with it. However, you could argue, just for argument's sake, you could argue that the moment you take the crystal, you've made the decision, so it's still not deterministic universe. you did something to cause that to happen, which is still choice. It just so happens that your choice plays out later on. It's not an immediate effect.
Liam?
I've got a very weird science-y way of looking at that. And I think, listeners, you, just a disclaimer, I do physics at university, but I'm still undergrad. So if I get some of this wrong, please don't kill me.
don't worry. The listeners always send the hate mail to Pat. Don't worry.
Okay. Yeah, yo, whatever you say, it'll be my fault. Don't worry.
Whatever I say is going to be Patrick's fault. Cool then. No, so I sort of see it similar to how quantum mechanics works in a way. So similar to how a wave function of a particle contains all the information of a particle, time crystals contain all the information of time. So to sort of use an analogy, there's no specific position of a particle, a quantum particle. So you can say that, whilst probably sounding crazy, that it exists everywhere at once. And then out of that, you can determine the probability density of something and where the actual position could potentially be, but not exactly be. I mean, I suppose you could talk of it in a way of like beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Whilst a human is the property of two arms and two legs, we don't have the property of beauty. It's only once you attribute a particular or that quantity to someone that you know what it is. So that's sort of like the particle has no known position until we actually give it one. So with the time crystals in mind, I sort of see that there is no set timeline happening at all. But once Pike touches it, he sees a future. And by taking it, he's effectively made a measurement of that timeline. And he's taking that timeline. And that is now set in stone.
That's exactly what I was saying.
That is exactly opposite of what you're saying. Oh, my gosh.
That's my weird way of science way of saying it. But again, disclaimer, I'm still only undergrad.
My original thesis, no. But my second point is that he made a choice to look into the crystal, and that's what made that real. So it's still not deterministic because you're just accounting for the time from the moment he touches it to the time it happens as being deterministic, right? But he made a choice to touch it. If he doesn't choose it, then that outcome is not going to happen.
That may or may not.
So the outcome is
right, but it's not determined. However, like when you say something's truly deterministic, it means that no matter what you do, it's going to happen. Whether he touches it, whether he doesn't touch it, whether he throws it, whether he shoots it, whether he never goes there in the first place, he's still going to end up in the menagerie, right? That's what's going to happen. But what I'm saying is, and I actually don't believe this. I just believe that because he saw it, he makes it happen. But what I'm saying, the other version could be that his choice of touching it sets off a chain of events that cause it to happen that now he can't get out of. So it's still choice, but it's just so the two points are so far apart, it seems deterministic.
Okay, so I'm going to throw in a TNG episode, Cause and Effect, because it seems related. Beverly Crusher breaks the glass every single loop. Her little, you know, sherry glass. And she puts it next to her bedside table. And when she hears the voices, she reaches for the light and the glass breaks. And the next loop, she's like drinking it. And she's like, oh, a little remembrance of the glass breaking. So she leaves it on the table, clear in the middle of the room, nowhere near her bed. And yet, even then, that loop, she knocks it and the glass breaks. Like in every single loop, that glass breaks. That's, in my mind, deterministic. So the time crystal, I mean, no matter what Beverly did, it was going to break. So are you saying when he makes that choice, no matter what he does, that's going to be the outcome?
Yes, but if you took that, if you go one step earlier and change it to he doesn't take the crystal, it doesn't happen. So now it's not deterministic. You're looking at too finite of a time period. That's like saying this. I have a glass sitting on my counter right now, right? And I make the choice to slap it. Well, every time I make the choice to slap it, it breaks. Well, no kidding. But if I choose not to slap it, it won't fall off and break.
Unless that glass has touched a time crystal and is always going to break itself.
Right. Unless, exactly. But that's what I mean. Like, the touching is me deciding to slap it. Mm-hmm. Now, my last example is very easy because I'm slapping it, it's falling. Mm-hmm. What if I slapped it and there was a time portal next to us and it went into the time portal and 6 years from now it fell and broke? Well, would you still call that deterministic? No, because my choice to slap it is still what caused the next set.
Interesting.
So that's where you can get it to not be deterministic while that moment is now become deterministic in an undeterministic universe.
This is why I love time episodes and time talk, because
they're extremely confusing.
Oh my gosh.
And you can just talk forever about it.
Looping around and around, yes.
Yeah. Right. Look, and I actually believe that it's just that he saw that, so he's going to make sure it happens because he believes that's what the right outcome of the universe is supposed to be. That he could have made choices in between there to not have that happen. But again, his choice to touch the time crystal causing it still makes the universe not deterministic. It's more of just cause and effect. He decided to touch it. The effect is he's going to die that way.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Okay.
He's going to end up in that position.
I see.
And it's not easy to see because it's not one right after the other. Right. There's a timeline in between there that makes it seem like, well, there's so much time for him to change that. Yes, I understand that, but that's not the way this works.
Uh-huh.
It is what it is now because that happened. Butterfly flaps its wings in Japan. We get a hurricane in New York. You know, like, that's just the way it is.
It's just so interesting. I spent hours working out how the Endgame's final finale worked. Just having to sit there like, did this happen? How did this happen? This goes here, there, and everywhere. And yeah.
But, well, time episodes are good. And if you like time episodes, you really should be watching certain episodes from Enterprise. But they drop the ball on that anyway. But all right, so now we've confused every listener here.
And myself.
With time crystals. I was trying not to include us. We're supposed to be the experts at the moment. So now that we've gone over what we believe time crystals are and if they're deterministic or if the universe is deterministic or if life is deterministic or if I'm even going to get through this podcast, let's talk about Kirk and what his universe would have been different had time crystals been used in that series. Does anyone have an example they wanted to look at that would have fit this time crystal method for Kirk?
Well,
I'm assuming no.
The example I was thinking of was Generations, and I know that's cheating.
Of course you were.
Because it's next gen.
And up next, the last episode of Enterprise.
But no, so, I mean, in Generations, you know, we see the demise of Kirk, and had he had the chance to grab a time crystal and know that he was going to, you know, quote unquote, be killed with the Enterprise B, would he have still, you know, gone on the maiden voyage to launch off the new Enterprise, knowing that that wouldn't be his fate, that he would then end up in the Nexus, being in this alternate reality, which I think he did not enjoy, which we get from the movie, because he chooses to leave the Nexus in order to have this real life experience. But then yet, that's his demise, fighting with Soren. So and it seems like such a small choice of, okay, so here he is an admiral. Well, should I launch the Enterprise B or shouldn't I? Like, that one choice is what causes Generations. And so what if he was given that time crystal and it's like, should I launch the Enterprise B? It's not even a big choice, but that sort of is the fate because he was on the Enterprise B.
I mean, you mean it in the case of would he take the time crystal to seal that fate? Mm-hmm. You see, without having seen as many episodes of TOS as Patrick, and I would sort of say that he would have an issue seeing that future and even taking the time crystal to start with. I always have thought Kirk to be sort of an arrogant captain. And I guess as we see in Wrath of Khan or whenever the Kobayashi Maru scenario was, that he won't accept something. It's like he won't accept his fate straight away. He'll always try and find a way around it. He probably wouldn't take the time crystal, try and find another way around it until he can't find another way.
The fact that you believe that he wouldn't take it unless it was the only option left to him.
Yeah, correct.
Now, I think for the same reason you think he wouldn't take it, I think he would take it.
Mm.
I think because of his arrogance, he would grab a hold of it because he would feel that no matter what the outcome was, he could change it to his liking.
Yeah, and that's another way of looking at exactly the same trait. Yeah.
Right. If the outcome is good, now he has an idea of how he got to that point, right? He would aim for it. And if the outcome is bad, well, he'd cheat the system.
No, exactly.
And he'd figure out a way around it. Now, you said, Amy, you said he didn't like being in the Nexus, right? But I think in the beginning he did, right? Don't they explain it like in the when he first got there, he was there with, wasn't he there with a woman that he loved? Or I've seen this movie twice.
Yeah, no, he was there. And it was, Picard who was like, okay, this isn't real. You know, when they jump the horses and he's like, yeah, this isn't the same. I don't think he really enjoyed it per se. I just don't think it was pointed out to him that it wasn't real. I think once he figured out that it was real, he was like, get me out of this because this is not reality. I like living, right. You know, my life.
So what I wonder is if he had the time crystal and saw that he was there doing the things he wanted to do. And, he doesn't see, Pike didn't see like a year's worth of time or he saw flashes.
He can only see a snippet,
Right. So maybe he would think that was an outcome he wanted and not know that he was in an alternate dimension of nothingness. Because to me, and again, I've only seen it twice, so you would know better than I would anyway. Well, maybe three times, whatever. It's not the movie I've watched the most is the point here. And however, it seems to me that when he finds out it's not real, it doesn't matter how much he likes or dislikes it. The fact that it's not real,
right.
He would want out. But if he doesn't know it's not real, he might be aiming for that outcome. So if he sees launching woman of his dreams, riding a horse with Picard, he might not know to avoid it. He might go, that seems like a really good way to retire. Let me do that.
It's like totally under false advertising from the time crystal.
Yeah, right.
Right. Is there a lemon law on this thing? What's going on?
Oh, that's our episode title. Crystals. I love it.
So I do think with his attitude and his arrogance, he would grab that thing faster than you would imagine.
Do you know? Yeah, I mean, I suppose it depends on what he sees.
Let's take it from that point of view.
How much of that future he sees, as you said, because he always pretty much wants to win. I always find as well, Kirk has always got to be number one.
So
absolutely true.
When I was explaining this, it was like, okay, well, knowing that his death would be A, not in his timeline. B, I mean, yeah, it does end up, saving the star system and everything, but is that where he wants to die alone on this planet with some random Captain Picard that he doesn't even know, So it's like if the time crystal showed him that, that's was not really the Nexus, just that would be his demise instead of, in his time, in his century with people that he loved for a good cause. I think,
Okay, so I think we have to get past two questions. All right, would he grab it? I agree, yes, he would. I think, especially if it was given to him the way it was given to Pike. Well, once you touch that, you can't change anything. And he would basically laugh that one off and, yeah, okay, and grab it. He's just that arrogant. And if he saw his demise that way, I think the real question here isn't, again, he's already taken the crystal. He can't decide at that point whether he wants the crystal or not. Because remember, they don't tell Pike what his outcome is before he looks at it. They just tell him it's going to be bad. So if he's given that proposition, would you take it? If you take it, whatever it shows you is set in stone and it's going
to
be bad.
See, no, but I think you can see what happens first and then decide to take it.
Yeah, because it was taking it from...
Yeah, so you've got to literally take off the time stick thing from the ground.
Right, okay. So in that scenario, I still think if he thinks it saves the universe, he would take it. Mm. I do.
Mm. Because I still think he's still a decent person in terms of...
Right, and he's still a Starfleet captain.
Exactly.
And so I still think he would take it, but I also don't think he'd believe it.
Mm. Yeah, that's...
Which would be the only reason why he wouldn't take it. It's because maybe he doesn't even buy into that whole nonsense and he'd just figure out his own way.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I think he would take it, just be like, maybe.
It's like, well, we'll see what happens, but you know what? I can probably change it myself, whatever. Mm. Mm. And if he was ever going to consider not taking it, Spock will be nagging in his ear anyway, going, oh, the dudes of the many, Captain.
Well, Spock did go through the gate and change history just to change history, you know, and then that got screwed up and then came back and fixed it. Moving along to the next captain.
Move along to captains that we are more familiar and like.
Yes, the ones that at least somebody here would have an idea of what they would think. But Amy's going to give you the answer again because it's Picard.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Okay. So I guess I had a little, I mean, I was thinking Locutus. I mean, because that was probably one of the most traumatic experiences for Picard. And that was something that, you know, a time crystal could easily show glimpses of, you know, with him as Locutus. The problem that I have that I think Discovery did better than what I am doing now is that Pike needed the time crystal for a specific purpose. And I'm having a hard time trying to figure out an episode of why Picard would need the time crystal to seal his fate to be Locutus. And, you know, so that's...
So I think there's an easy way to fix that.
I'm just ashamed to
every one of these captains are in Pike's position.
Exactly. That's how I...
If you just take... Right. If you take... This is the part when we were talking before, earlier on, I couldn't figure out what we were trying to explain. Okay, thank you. That makes it a lot easier for me. If you take every one of these shows and just add in a Red Angel, right, that you need to get this time crystal for, would Picard, see becoming Locutus, still take the time crystal seal in his fate?
That's exactly how I visioned every single scenario.
Okay, now it has totally clicked
right
in my
the
mind.
First part, the reason he needs it doesn't have to be an episode of the series.
Okay.
Just a negative that happens has to be a part of the series.
Oh, okay, because I was trying too hard on
I couldn't
this.
Understand that either
I'm
until
probably
right
it
now.
Terribly sorry.
It probably wasn't you at all. No. It was probably us. And don't worry, they're going to hate me in the email, so.
Oh, gosh.
All right, so... I came up with Locutus, and I sort of felt that was too obvious, but it's, I think, the best. But my plan B for Picard was in Chain of Command when he was tortured by, oh my gosh, why did I just space out on his name? The Romulan. Chain of Command. Anyways.
You're the one on Earl Grey.
Ah.
Fired.
Okay. So... All right. So I was thinking, like with Picard, he's so sometimes overconfident and like he gets to be this way, especially when he's talking about humanity and what we've overcome. And, you know, Q definitely points out you have a long ways to go. And, you know, in Q Who, that's when Q takes him to the Delta Quadrant to meet the Borg. And then we get this whole thing. So, and it's interesting that in First Contact, we get to see Picard really his vengeful side, which I think is not typical of Picard. But Lily points out, like, you know, your vengeance, this is civility. This isn't you. This isn't a civilized, what a civilized person would do. But it still goes down to that basic characteristic of many humans, and I don't know if we will ever overcome that. And so to have Picard seeing glimpses of becoming Borg and maybe even himself as a vengeful person, like I think that would be scaring him actually more than becoming Locutus, because he always is so overconfident about, you know, humanity and the successes that we have.
All right, so let's unpack that a little bit. The idea that being vengeful is just in and of itself uncivil, I find a little wrong anyway to begin with. I mean, there has to be some ability to defend oneself and not take garbage from people.
You're not going to take
otherwise
everything lying down.
Right, there has to be, because even people will take advantage of you when they don't know they're doing it. So you have to be able to stand up for yourself, right? And I know it's a really great like message to say, oh, we should all just get along and hold hands and kumbaya, but it just wouldn't work anywhere, ever. And even if all of humanity could agree not to attack each other, well, we live in a universe with other races, right? So if we all just sat around not being vengeful at all, we'd just be taken over by one of those other kingdoms, you know, the Klingon Empire or the Romulan Empire or the Borg or whatever. So like that whole idea, it sounds great on paper. It just doesn't work. So I don't know. Maybe he himself wouldn't want to be vengeful, but for the right reasons, is that really a wrong thing to do it in the first place?
Well, I think that's what I think would scare him the most is
maybe.
Yeah.
But I mean,
so I think it's like family, glimpses right? of that. If he were to see the time crystal, you know, because of his experience with the Borg, that he becomes this person that we see in First Contact. I think that is the glimpse that he would see if he were to grab the time crystal, and that would scare him. And then he would have to think, am I going to take the time crystal? Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
Would scare him more than the actual pain and becoming suffering of becoming Locutus.
But what would that even be more painful to him than aiding the Borg at Wolf 359? And
right, like, I don't believe that would be.
I don't think so either. I feel like he would have more trouble with the fact that he's aided the Borg in their way through the Alpha Quadrant.
Yeah, I also think he's kind of smart enough to understand that to some level, vengeance is okay. At some degree, it is. That's a fact. I mean, you can shake your head, no.
Well, I don't believe Picard believes that. I mean, you can say it's a fact, even though that's the wrong use of the term. But I think Picard
civilization
is because
cannot exist without some degree of it.
He's so philosophically enlightened, and that's what we get in TNG, this idealistic. I mean, that's the whole cocoon.
I understand, and I think that was ridiculous about TNG.
Okay, well, that's not the conversation we're going down.
But no, it is, because I think he's smart enough to understand that at some level, he needs some ability to do this. My point is, he would definitely be more upset about helping the Borg than he would that he was vindictful about helping the Borg.
Well, I sort of disagree, because Picard wasn't helping. That was Locutus.
Physically speaking, it was him.
So I don't think, you know, you can put that on him. I know Sisko does.
I would.
But that wasn't Picard.
And here's the deal. Wait. But in your scenario, it is Picard. Because in your scenario, he actively grabs a crystal to become Locutus. Without grabbing the crystal, he doesn't become Locutus, doesn't become vengeful, right? That's the premise here. So, if he decides to grab it, he actively became Locutus and is responsible for any of Locutus's actions.
If we look at it, the obviously from a Discovery standpoint, that he's got to take the crystal if there's no other way, because all sentient life, blah blah blah. I don't think him becoming vengeful is going to be an issue for him. I feel like helping a lot of other people die, or helping the Borg that way and helping people, just helping them go through the Alpha Quadrant, assimilating a whole load of people, I feel like that would be where he will struggle. I feel like he'll then trot off back to the ship first, analyze with Data, spend 20 minutes of talking with Data about all the science of the time crystals, and then go off to Troy and then maybe talk about the vengeful nature of it. But Troy will be like, Captain, like, no. You know, this isn't the kind of thing you need to worry about. I mean, it's all sentient life. But again, I don't think the vengefulness will be the massive thing for him.
No, and it might be in the way it was written on the show, but once you introduce the crystal where it's his choice, I think the helping people all die is worse.
Okay, I can see your point.
But at the same time, he'll end up taking it. I mean, just like in all the scenarios we're going to talk about, like, they're going to take it. They're all Starfleet captains at the end of the day. But with Picard, his issue is going to be, or sticking point will be, you know, 10,000 or so people dying at Wolf 359.
Right. And I think the sad thing, too, here is, because, again, he's now has to play this out, right? We're taking the premise that Pike does everything he can to end up at the menagerie, right? So if you take it, that's what happens. The harder part for him at that point, unlike Kirk, is Kirk's going to spend his time trying to figure a way out of that outcome, where Picard's going to steer into that outcome, I think.
Yeah.
Again, because of his honor and his feel for duty and you know, if I don't, maybe then what I did the first time to fix everything reverses itself and it doesn't fix everything and everyone dies anyway.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Can I offer another Picard scenario that could be interesting? And I'm not going to lay claim to this. Chris Littlefield actually brought it up to me the other day. Hi, Chris. He wanted a shout out. he mentioned about in Generations and Picard seeing a future whereby his family die in the fire and how he would react to that, because that would be a very traumatic experience. You could tell just how upsetting it was for him in Generations and his underlying family issues and so on. Would he take the time crystal then, knowing just the amount of guilt that killing his own family and only his own family, and then knowing that Starfleet and being in that position is what's caused it in the first place, which then adds to all of his issues with his family, like take going Starfleet over running the family business at the vineyard. Does that make sense of what I said?
Yeah.
No, it makes perfect sense. No, the hard part is answering the question, not understanding the question.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, because a personal family death is way more impactful than all sentient life or whatever, or becoming the Borg for a little while and getting out of it. You know what I mean?
I think I see Picard worrying more about the many deaths that, say, like you were saying, Wolf 359, compared to the two or the three from his family personally. I think he's a...
Well, 359 happens anyway.
Big picture type of person where I don't think, you know, well, if I have to sacrifice, you know, my brother, my nephew, that to him, I think it would be easier than to see the carnage and destruction at Wolf 359 and that what he did as Locutus.
Yeah, I think so. But that's not necessarily the question either, though. The question is, would he still take it to get the crystal to save sentient life in another incident that happens before all of this?
Yeah, I'm saying he would.
Mm, see,
he would.
Because even taking the crystal in the Borg scenario, he still becomes Locutus.
That's if he takes
that,
the crystal.
That
yeah.
still happens. It's just sentient life exists after that. Grabbing the crystal doesn't prevent the incident at Worf 359. It prevents another incident before that that would have ended all sentient life.
Exactly.
Grabbing the crystal, in fact, locks in what happened at when he becomes Locutus.
It locks in becoming Locutus, but it will also lock in just how devastating 359 was.
Correct.
But if, how,
but if he doesn't, it's worse.
But if he doesn't take the time crystal, obviously all sentient life will die, but then Wolf 359 wouldn't be so bad. Which, at the end of the day, I mean, it's a no-brainer what you would do. But there will be a lot of struggle to get there. There will be a lot of hesitation to get there.
Yeah, look, a million people are going to die or all sentient life in the universe.
Yeah, I mean...
just a million people have to die.
That's probably one of my biggest issues with Discovery. Everything was so grandiose. It's like, oh, sentient life's going to die, or everything's going to explode, or the whole planet will blow up. It's like, there's a lot of grandiose...
high stakes, yeah.
Yeah, high stakes scenarios.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and not just one a season, it's 30.
Yeah, exactly. So, and a lot of them are predictable, too.
Right.
Still a great series. I'm not going to complain.
So, all right, so I think we all agree that no matter what scenario we throw at Picard, he's going to take the crystal, save all sentient life, and then deal with the repercussions of what happens afterwards.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a lot of trauma for him.
We can argue over what parts we think is worse for him personally, but irrelevant. He's going to take the crystal in the end. So, Liam, you want to give your Sisko explanation?
Sure. Sisko, I found quite difficult to think of a scenario in terms of whether he would or wouldn't take the crystal, because it depends on where he is in the series, or what sort of whereabouts Sisko is in the series and what Sisko we're looking at. Because if you look at the beginning of the series, he has a lot of hatred towards Starfleet, Picard, having to join DS9. He doesn't want to be there. Whereas at the end of the series, he's, you know, very rough and tumble and ain't afraid to blur the lines. So I sort of thought, what if he saw some of the goings on either or in the pale moonlight, just about how far a line he crosses? And if he saw that at the beginning of the series, whereas if he saw it in the middle of the series, like his personality, because I feel like his personality and his opinions changed quite a lot throughout Deep Space Nine. So, for example, I mean, if we look at what he did in the Pale Moonlight, he bribes Quark, which, again, is not something Starfleet captain should do. He lies to his crew. He sells the ingredients for biogenic weapons. He forces Bashir to do that. He lied to the Romulans, got caught, is the accessory to murder of a high-profile senator in Vrenak and whoever that blue guy was called. But then he admits he'll do it all again at the end of the episode. So to me, if he gets that way in the middle of the series, he'll look at that, see some of the things he's done with the time, like through the time crystal, and think, well, screw it, I'm going to take it, because he's so rough and tumble. He'll just be like, no, this is mine. If you saw it at the beginning of the series, though, he'd only just getting over the issues of losing Jennifer, again at 359, he would be so protective of Jake at the beginning of the series, that I don't feel like he would take it. I feel like he would have so much hesitation and so much hurt that it's happening to him again, if you know what I mean. Like something bad is going to happen to him. Or not bad, should I say, but his moral or morality will be questioned.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, you know, one that I was sort of going with Picard, like when it's this character trait in you that changes, you know, for the worse. Like Picard's never vengeful until we see him in First Contact because of Locutus and the Borg. And so, yeah, the same point where it's like, yeah, at the beginning, Sisko is more idealistic. And I think seeing him cross that line is a very scary, I think, for what you said, for him at the beginning of the series compared to him at the end of the series. I agree with you.
Like Liam said, it's important to note that in the beginning of the series, he didn't like Starfleet at the time. He was upset about being there. So, and in the end, you know, he also wasn't a captain. It's important to remember, in the beginning of that series, he's a commander, which is not a captain. So he doesn't have the same experience and training as a Picard, an Archer, a Janeway, a Kirk has, a Pike has, right? And on top of that, we're also just assuming these captains and commander believe they have to take the crystal in order to save it, that there is no other option. Just because that's what they go in with the idea on, that doesn't mean they can't convince themselves out of that idea before they leave. So they could grab it and see all the events that take place at that time, and maybe he would see it and go, oh, I think we can find another way that doesn't cause this to end up happening. And I think Sisko would be the one that would do that. And I think it's evident in the time that Sisko orders everybody, and this is late in the series, I don't think Sisko would ever grab the crystal. I think Sisko would try and find a way out of it, you know, without using the crystal, because he kind of has a similar attitude as Kirk has, but it's just twisted enough that Kirk would grab it saying, eh, I'll figure it out later. Whereas Sisko would say, I don't need to be that person. However, I can figure this out. And I think that's evident when he pulls everyone off the station and leaves the baseball behind for the Cardassians to find. Because all that is a giant middle finger and a, oh, by the way, I know you think this is over, but it's not over. And I can't, Gal Dukat knows that's exactly what he's doing the moment he sees it. So there's not even a question. Like, he told him, I'm coming back. I'll be back, buddy. Just wait. And when you want to sneak up on somebody, you don't tell them you're coming back, right? But he had no problem letting Gal Dukat know he's coming back and still pulling off the mission. So I think Sisko wouldn't take it, figuring he would find another way to save all sentient life without it. And I don't mean that as a knock on him, because like we said, oh, well, they're all captains, so they'll all obviously take it. That's provided they believe it's the only way.
Exactly. See, I agree with you when you were talking about Kirk in that he would take it and find another way, but I think Sisko would take it and not care, like, if it's late season Sisko. I feel like he'll realize that, well, this needs to be done. If the Dominion War is getting so bad, because when I talk about taking it mid-season, the Dominion War would have already started, so we'd have known that something was going really bad for him to do something like that. I feel like he'd be like, yeah, that's fine. I'll take it. I accept that, because he accepts it at the end of In the Pale Moonlight. He talks about it and says that, yeah, okay, I've lost some of my self-respect, or I think that's what Garrick said, really, but he can live with it. So that's why I think he will take the crystal without a care in the world if it's mid-season Sisko or mid-DS9 Sisko. But if it's early Sisko, that's where he would have issues taking it.
I mean, you could be right, and most listeners will probably agree with you. But my only thing is, at that point, you know, again, it's they only see clips, right?
Yeah, so it depends on how
nothing
much
really
see.
Severely, nothing severely bad happens to Sisko where you can point to that one clip for him to see, except for this.
I mean,
incident, yeah. You know, Pale Moonlight incident, but it doesn't happen directly to him. He just becomes a person he doesn't like for a moment. So, but if you showed him his son dying, right, because of these actions, or something else,
anything to happen to Jake,
at that point, that would it. He wouldn't grab it, in my opinion. That would be the end of that story. And also, I think he feels because late season, now he's starting to believe that he is the, what's the word I'm looking for? Where he talks to the wormhole aliens. He's there. There you go. I couldn't think of the word. Sorry. I kept wanting to say prophet, but that's not the right word. But in the beginning, he doesn't believe he's, it kind of parallels the emissary story. In the beginning, he doesn't believe he's one. By the end, he believes it so much that he ends up going and becoming one of them, basically, you know?
I mean, that was the other scenario I was thinking of. Would he foresee himself becoming like a non-corporeal, non-linear wormhole alien and leaving Jake behind?
And he does.
Exactly.
He ends up doing that.
Exactly.
And I think you're right. It depends on where in the story that takes place.
Because I feel like Sisko has one of the biggest changes across all seven seasons
of
the show.
Well, he goes from commander to captain, too. They show it to you in his rank alone when that change happens, you know? As a storytelling device. But early on, he's so concerned about Jake. By the end, Jake's grown up a little bit, and he kind of feels that Jake can stand on his own two feet. So he's more willing to take on the mantle of emissary and go and be the emissary, whereas early on, he wanted to be father first. I mean, that's the fight he had with Picard. And that's, by the way, that's a scene where Picard's very un-Picard-like, by the way, where he's just like, suck it up, you got to do it.
Yeah, it was an odd scene.
Thanks, Picard. Like, thanks. And actually, I believe it would be very similar to how a captain would talk to a commander. It's just not what we've been fed about Picard for 5 years at that point.
The other thing I thought of, which is only because I was watching little bits of Emissary recently, is that he would see himself wearing that awful purple swimsuit and think, oh, God, I can't wear that.
Oh, my gosh.
Every time I see it, I'm like, whoa, I'm really glad I'm not wearing 24th century clothing.
If you wanted me to murder an entire society, fine. But I'm not wearing that bathing suit.
Too revealing.
That's where I draw the line.
That's funny.
So what about Janeway?
Janeway, I love Janeway. She's by far my favorite captain. And as you can probably tell, Voyager's my favorite show. But you think of all the things that happen in Voyager and some of the really bad things, it comes back to the famous Voyager reset button. Like, you think of Year of Hell, it's reset. If you think of Deadlock, well, it's easily split. They split the ship apart, one survives, everything's all fine. So it really led me back to think that Janeway would see herself getting stranded simply in the Delta Quadrant, you know, the whole premise of the show, by destroying the array and helping the Akumpa. She's making the decision to strand her crew to help another alien species. That's the sort of scenario that I figured that she would look at. But then again, we all know she's very by the book, and tries to stay within Starfleet protocols as much as she can. She's the most stubborn, I think, out of all of them when it comes to that, which, I mean, I think is great because, I mean, you got to stick to your ideals. But because of her nature, she, and we saw it in the show, that she's very much hurt and conflicted by it for all seven seasons of the show.
Without even giving a scenario of what would be what she saw, the very first episode of Voyager shows that she would pick to take the crystal, save the universe, and deal with it after.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
exactly 100%.
The very first episode, she strands her crew to try and save that space station.
She does what needs to be done. But you see, when she does what she needs to be done, if it was herself, I feel like she's probably the most self-sacrificing captain of all of them in terms of if it only affected her, what she saw. So if she was in the exact same scenario as Pike, saw herself disfigured, injured in that BP wheelchair thing, she'll hands down be like, she'll just take it. But because her decisions are affecting other people, I feel like she would struggle because she's a very loyal and protective captain.
Yeah, well, she does struggle throughout the series.
Well, we see that in the episode
with
nine,
her choice.
Where she's really depressed about it.
Yeah, yeah, she does struggle. However, I mean, she made good time. She made a 77 light year voyage in about 7 years, so she did all right.
Yeah, but that's why I think she would take the time crystal because we know she has plenty of run-ins with, you know, Captain Braxton and the Time Police, and she just totally disregards the Temporal Prime Directive at the end of Voyager as a whole in Endgame. If she doesn't like the timeline, she'll just change it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I absolutely agree. She would just grab the crystal. I think it's shown from the first episode, and it carries through the entire series.
Exactly. And
Amy?
Yeah, she's just very strong.
Yeah, I have been watching a little bit more Voyager, and have to agree with you, because I think Janeway has the ideals of Picard and the action of Kirk.
Yeah, she's as headstrong as Kirk is, but in Picard's ideals.
Yeah, and so if that's the future and the outcome is to save all sentient life, yeah, there's no question, and you're right, she would take it. Again, because I think her ideals would lead her to, and then she would have the, all right, we're going to fix it later. And she might even think that she's going to be able to cheat it somehow. I think she's got a little bit of that, you know,
But she does cheat it. Even in the series, she cheats.
Well, the overall scenario of Endgame, she cheats the whole premise of the show.
Right. The whole idea of the show was that she was going to take her 77 years to get home, and it took them seven. You know, I mean, everywhere they went, they shaved 10 light years off here, 15 light years off there, 5 light years off here. You know, you don't do that if you're not mentally capable of doing that and mentally strong enough to keep pushing forward. So I think the show itself answers that question.
Exactly,
in that, yeah, she would do it and she would just figure it out later. Much like Kirk.
I always feel like Janeway always made very tough decisions quite quickly as well. I mean, I don't want to bring up the T word, but I will do. It might set the Babel Conference on fire. But the whole scenario of Tuvix, she split him apart because she needed Neelix and Tuvok. She knew what she needed, and she had to do it, even though it effectively killed someone.
Your point is well taken, though. She, whether you agree with the move or not, she makes the decision very quickly because of what she needed to get moving forward.
Yeah, correct. And that's
so if she needed to grab a time crystal for her mission, she's going to grab it and worry about it later, no matter what it showed her, no matter how horrified she was, which is kind of what we feel like Pike did, right? Pike was like, okay, I'll take it. I can't believe I did this. What am I going to do now?
Pike's quote, though, in Discovery was amazing. I thought it was one of the most powerful quotes or lines of the show. When he took the time crystal. I mean, I think I've got it written down. He goes, you're a Starfleet captain. You believe in service, sacrifice, compassion, and love. I'm not going to abandon the things that make me who I am because of a future that contains an ending I haven't foreseen for myself. And it applies to all of the captains, really.
Yeah, I would agree. So, well, that would bring us, because I think it's very convincing that
Janeway's the easiest, yeah.
Yeah. That brings us to Archer, and I think Archer is just as easy to figure out as Janeway would be, because in Enterprise, we end up having episodes, we have things like the Temple Cold War, and Cold Front, and the Suliban, and Stormfront, and Shockwave, and Carpenter Street, and Azadi Prime, where there is time travel, there's actual time travel in the episode, mostly created by Daniels, who ends up dying in the beginning of season four. The reason we have this, is, and we have a few of them where he goes into the future and sees a future where Starfleet never existed. Now, he sees this because Daniel's trying to explain to him that we need you to come back and live, because if you don't live, Starfleet will never exist. But would Archer grab that time crystal to make sure that Starfleet exists? And I believe it's a yes.
Oh, God.
Even if he knows his outcome is to end up in the future dead somewhere or whatever the case may be. If we turn it and make it, instead of all sentient life, just Starfleet existing, I think he would grab it. Because he knows how important that is to the future.
Well, exactly. I mean, we also saw in Azadi Prime that he was ready to take a suicide mission just to go and make sure that that weapon wasn't going to ever get to...
dispatched on Earth.
Yeah, exactly. He lost a lot of his naivety, I feel, in season three. So, I mean, I feel he was naive and weak, but to me, that's probably because of season one and two. I struggled with season one and two of Enterprise.
You're not the only one. A lot of people did because it was so hopeful, and it was just, there was really no stakes involved in any of the episodes. It was just exploration for the sake of exploration, and people wanted to see more. And then we got season three, which was just a retelling of 9/11. But so that's a quite interesting question. See, the problem is we have to get to season three in order to see him up against adversity. So in season one or two, if they had shown him, if he was in a situation where all of sentient life would die, and they show him the end of season two, beginning of season three happening in the time crystal, would he grab the time crystal? I still believe yes, because he understands that even though Earth was attacked, all sentient life is still worse than Earth.
Yes. I mean, so again, it's one of those 7 million people compared to everything.
Right. The stakes are just too complex, you know. And because when we get into season three, we see he's willing to do things that would compromise himself to make sure the whole Earth doesn't blow up.
Well, and that's why I thought Archer was more like Sisko, because like you said, Liam, he's so innocent and young and hopeful. And then we get season three, you know, and I forget the episode where it's like he makes this decision almost the same as in the Pale Moonlight, where it's like that decision changed him, and who he is after is completely different. And again, because of the circumstances he's put into, and it's like, you know, you sort of give up your soul a little bit in order to save humanity, if you will. And I think that that is very scary. And I think in the beginning, I sort of have to go along with what we said with Sisko. It's like, he's still so hopeful that maybe he would be thinking, well, I'm not going to take the time crystal because I think I can change it. Humanity can change it. We can have a different outcome. I don't need the time crystal. But then afterwards, it's like, okay, well, be damned. We're going to take the time crystal and we're going to save it and let the consequences be as they may.
So I think if you asked him in season one or two, he would say that was his answer. However, if you presented him with a situation where all of humanity and the universe was going to die, he would take the crystal, because at that point he would have been through something. The something he's been through is the event of everything dying that would have changed him at that moment. Does that make sense? See, the problem is...
Yes, but you can say that with any...
No, because Sisko changes because of Sisko changing over time, multiple events. Archer changes because of one event. One event changes Archer, and it's the attack on Earth. If you just up that attack by a season, that still changes him in the same way.
You almost see a complete change in him.
You would have to move all the events for Sisko forward for that to happen, not a single event. That's where I'm drawing the line between him and Sisko, is that because it's a singular event that happens, just because it didn't happen yet doesn't mean that if it did happen, he wouldn't have had this outcome earlier. You know, because again, the hard part of this whole discussion is we're plugging in the Red Angel into a point in the timeline. So for Sisko, if you plug the Red Angel in season two, do I think that was enough to change him into the later season Sisko? I don't. If you plug in the Red Angel into season one of Enterprise, I think that's enough to change Archer.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Personally.
I would agree with that. Amy, when you were talking about the one moment, were you talking about the attack on Earth, or were you talking about the episode Damage, where he stole the coil?
Yes,
the
Damage.
Coil?
Yeah. That's the episode that I see Archer changing.
Well, that's the one where he's most like Sisko, for sure.
I mean, I watched that one yesterday because I wanted to think about that episode for coming on here today. The difference in him in that episode compared to what I remember of Archer from when I watched Enterprise, I think it was like 2 years ago, last time I watched like the run through of Enterprise. I'm just like, oh, okay, no, he's a lot stronger than I thought he was. And yeah, no, leads me to take the crystal.
And Damage is when we notice the most change in him. But I felt that was, if you watch season 3, it's cumulative. It's working up to that. And I feel like the workup was better done on purpose, probably. Not it's you know, however, it's preference. Whereas with Sisko, it was kind of a flip of a switch, where Archer was building to that point, in my opinion. But I think he really changed with the attack on Earth. And he just didn't feel like he needed to go that far with the others. He just had to threaten and do stuff like that. I feel like if he may have airlocked the guy in episode 2 of season 3 if he felt he needed to. But he didn't need to. He threatened it an awful lot. He definitely changed between season 2 and 3. I mean, there was a massive change in him. I think the more interesting question for Enterprise would not be the captain. It would actually be Trip. If the fate of the universe existed and Trip had to see his sister die, would he still take the crystal? And I say no.
Yeah. Do you know what?
I think Trip is one of the best characters ever. I think he'd let sentient life. I think they're bad people because they wouldn't do it. I think he would convince himself there's another way out of this.
But I also don't think Trip would tell anyone either. That he saw that.
Probably not.
We keep that well internalized.
Probably not. And if he did, it would only be Archer. The only person I could see him telling, and I think you're right, I don't think he would. But if he told anyone, it would only be Archer because of their friendship. And maybe to Paul late season 4 when they're, you know, in the midst of their romantic relationship. But yeah.
Yeah, no. I do feel like Archer would end up taking the crystal quite easily. Janeway, easily. I still think Kirk. Picard. Yeah, I don't know.
No, I agree with most of that. I agree. I think the easiest to pick is Janeway. I think Sisko is split between early and late Sisko. I think Archer would do it. I think Kirk would do it. And I personally think Kirk would do it because he would just grab it, use it for what it has to be used for, and then ignore everything else and act like that's not going to happen. You know, look, I can give it to the Red Angel. We can fix this problem real easily. I'll worry about the end of the end of, you know, whatever later.
Do you know, there'd be like a whole, with TNG, there'd be a whole episode of Picard just trying to make the decision.
Well, no. Now listen.
That would actually be a two-parter.
One episode talking to Data.
He would
other
make
Troy.
The decision. He would make the decision, I think, very clearly. And then the rest of the episode would be him justifying it and putting his ideals to it. So, yes, I will give you that. I'm still thinking Archer may or may not. I think with his bright-eyed, bushy-tail innocence at the beginning, I still am going to stay strong with that. That he may or may, I don't think that he would. I think after Damage, I think that has changed him so much that he would take the time crystal. I still think that he is curious enough and, you know, into this exploration, and that he would say, well, we could do it another way. You know, I think he would do that. Janeway, definitely, I agree with you. She would. Picard definitely would, but then explain it later. And Kirk
for 2 episodes.
Kirk would say,
"History potentially."
Hey, now,
yeah, and a movie spinoff,
Star Trek: The Next Generation. And is a decision.
I think with Kirk, I think he would, but then try and Kobayashi Maru it, you know, so that it's he would fix it.
Right, he fixes the game afterwards. Yeah. You know. you know, he knew he had to take the test, so he breaks the, you know, he breaks the system. And that's how, all right, well, I'll, whatever. I'll figure this out.
That'll be a 2-minute episode, that one.
That really would. All sentient life's going to die, and you have to see a horrible future. Yeah, don't worry about the future, guy. Done.
Same with Janeway, really.
It is, but Janeway would watch and go, man.
She would get angry at Kenneth Mitchell, Klingon number 3, for warning her so much.
And then someone would hope she was in a romantic relationship with her number 1. And that would how the episode would end. Everyone was always shipping two.
I'm not going to go there. As long as it's not Chakotay and Seven.
Okay, so that's the rundown there. Any other honorable mentions of characters? Like, I brought up Trip, but anyone else you think this would be an interesting question for? Because, like, Trip, I really believe, would not do it if he knew Elizabeth dies, but he would do it under any other circumstance.
I feel like watching Kira would be interesting. Kira, Major Kira. Because of seeing how much horror that she went through the Cardassian War and so on. But at the same time, she was a child when all of that started, so I guess taking the time crystal when she was a child would be quite a difficult thing to try and explain or see. But if we fast forwarded the time a little bit and she was an adult when she touched the time crystal and would have seen what happened during the occupation of Bajor, would she take it? I mean, I think she would struggle just because of the amount of pain she went through.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think she would. Again, though, with her, the problem is, again, you have such an arrogant character. She may still feel she could get her way out of it. I think you're right in the long run that she would struggle greatly with it. But there could be an argument made the other way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why I thought this topic of conversation would be quite interesting, because I figured we'd all have very different views on how a character's personality is. Because let's face it, they're all fictional. As much as we want Star Trek to be real.
Right. Look, yeah, the way it really works out is however the writer felt like writing it that week.
Yeah. So. And let's face it, we wouldn't have a decent story if someone was like, no, I don't feel like I'm going to take that. End of the show.
Yeah.
Everyone's dead.
All life doesn't exist.
It's like, wow. There's your hopeful, optimistic future.
There's your Game of Thrones ending.
But it would be interesting, actually, just as a side note, to see in the Picard series that's coming out just how much the Borg and, like, Locutus affects him in this series, as well as the death of his family. Because obviously we've seen him back on the Vinyar in the trailer. So it'd be interesting just to see how they affect him, completely separate from the time crystal scenario, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
And it would actually give more information for us to discuss this.
Mm, exactly.
All right. So, Liam, thank you for coming on with us. Where can people find you if they'd like to contact you on the internet?
I'm not visible on the internet too much, should I say. I don't have Twitter because I tend to get addicted to social media, but you can find me in the Babel Conference. Feel free to message me on Facebook. I'm happy to talk back.
Awesome. Awesome. And again, thank you for coming on. That was a great topic. And we kind of weren't too clear on what we were doing here up until we got here, and I think it worked out really well.
It did. Yeah. Thank you, Liam, so much.
I hope so.
It's been fun debating on which captains would or would not take time crystals today, but that isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Wait, so what switched between your two lists?
Calypso comes in, Runaway comes in second importance.
Right. Okay.
But Calypso comes in second in enhancement of the season.
Okay. I see.
And really, even
there.
In importance, I could probably in my head flip Calypso and Runaway because I don't need Runaway.
Literary Treks.
I find that the characters don't quite look like they're actors. You're right. And I think that's because I started to see something, little flashes in both Pike's face and in number one's face. Is this a representation? And maybe this is totally me reading in way too deep, but is Pike kind of our John F. Kennedy in the sense that Jeffrey Hunter died tragically? Pike's story ended quite tragically as the first pilot. And I think we've been sort of trying to sort of what if him. right? And I think a lot of people, what if the death and loss of Kennedy in the 1960s as well, which I think also has a lot to do with the hopeful nature of why Star Trek TOS was the way it was, right?
Earl Grey.
Imagine if aliens came to STLV or something like that and said, hey, we're making first contact.
It'd be like, oh, yeah, sure. Oh, wow, that's an amazing cosplay.
Great cosplay, exactly.
or your cosplay is terrible. Yeah,
yeah, you're like, you know what? You don't look like anybody who's been in Star Trek. What are you supposed to be?
And introducing our newest show, The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
Alternative Factor is better than Nemesis.
Alternative Factors. I know you'll say Alternative Factors better than a lot of things, and I'll disagree.
I'm going to abstain from an opinion there.
Good, I win. You guys don't fight me on that one.
There you go. Oh. Right, an abstention's as good as a no. Okay, or a yes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Edge. That will come right to me, and we just might read your email on the show like we did last week. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So Patrick, where can people find you when you are not obviously taking a time crystal and worrying about it later?
So when I'm not doing that, you can find me on Twitter at MagicDrop5. That is no spaces. The five is a digit. You can also find me on this network for another couple episodes with Brandon Shamatala, where I will be doing the Warp 5. And you can find me popping in on the Babel Conference from time to time when my schedule allows it. And you will also be able to find me soon coming to you from a new podcast on the United Federation of Podcasts, which will be Mickey's Marvels. And that's with my good friend Chris Tribuzio, who's also a associate producer here. And we talk everything Disney. And with the D23 just coming out and finding out that Star Wars is getting its own series on the new streaming network, we will be covering that. We will still be covering all the old Disney every other week. We will also be covering the Star Wars series the same way we cover Discovery here. So we'll be coming to you every week with Star Wars, every other week with Disney. So you'll get three episodes every 2 weeks. So, Amy, where can people reach you when you're not, trying to figure out whether you want to sacrifice your children to a time crystal or not?
Well, my students are my children and you can just take them. No, I'm just kidding. No. Listeners, you know I'm totally kidding. I love my students. You can find me here on the network.
Here. She's lying. She's lying. Only at the end does she like them.
You can find
only
me
if they pass as well.
Yes. Yes, you can take all the failing with students. So you can find me here on the network where I co-host Earl Grey with Justin Ozer and Joe Keegan. Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. And I am right there in the Babel Conference.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/TrekFM. That's patreon.com/TrekFM to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/TrekFM.
We'd like to thank our special time crystals this week. They are Norman Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Mallett, Chris Tribuzio, Brian Malosh. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Edge.
Thank you for listening, and join us next time to see what's happening on The Edge of Federation Space.